Meeting will come to order. Seated to my right is my aide Kate Maxwell. I am the president, Karen Hartley Nagel. Here is Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Councilman Street.
Out of order.
Councilman Bell, Councilman Woods, Councilman Cartier, Councilman Smiley, Councilman Weiner, and Councilwoman Diller. Next, approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections or amendments to the minutes of the meeting of January 3rd, 2017?
Motion to approve is distributed.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Next on the agenda items, we have all appointee nominations that are here, and after each resolution is read, we will call each nominee up to answer any questions council may have for them. The first one is R17005, consenting to the appointment of Brian Maxwell for the position of Chief Financial Officer. Let's see, is Brian? Brian, please come to the table.
I'm here.
Okay. And we have Councilman Powers just joined us. Let's see. Mr. Maxwell, is there any discussion or comment? Yes, Mr. Smiley.
Yeah, I just want to say, down legislative hall last week, hearing Mr. Maxwell present, I felt very comfortable. I think he did an outstanding job, you know, there with Mr. Meyer. Did a great job, and I don't mean to alienate anyone else's, well, I don't care if I hurt their feelings, but alienate them. I haven't had this, while there are mainstays in the finance department, which is A. Milowicki and others who do a great job, at the upper level, I have not had this much of a comfort level since Mr. Strine was here with Newcastle County. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate the comment.
Thank you. Mr. Weiner?
I don't know if I'm looking for you.
Yes. thank you, Madam President. And I would just like to say that it's a very important function that our legislative branch performs in advising and consenting to nominations, just like in a government where there's checks and balances. The executive branch often provides the final approval when council or the legislative branch starts. And I concur with the remarks that were made by my fellow councilman, but I just think for the record, historic record, if you could just introduce yourself and say a little bit about yourself. I know we've all had your resumes, but this will be for historic archival purposes.
Sure. Name's James Brian Maxwell, but I go by Brian. I am a lifelong Delawarean. I grew up in Newcastle, attended Holy Spirit Elementary School, which is no longer there, but that's where I grew up. I did attend Slazy Adam High School, for better or for worse. Some of you may have like it or don't like it, but then I attended the University of Delaware. My first job out of college was going to work as a financial analyst at PSC&G, the nuclear power plant. It wasn't a good fit for me. I only stayed for about 6 months, and I took a job at Citibank, which was located at 2 Penns Way. And I spent 7 years there, making it up through loan administrator ranks all the way up to vice president. And so I learned a lot there. But what happened was they went through a merger. Solomon Smith Barney and Citibank merged. And a lot became about headcount, and the quality of life kind of subsided for me a little bit. And so I was getting ready to start a family, so I decided to look outside of the private sector, and I applied for a job in the public sector. I became the cash and debt manager for the state of Delaware in the treasurer's office. So in 2005, I joined Treasurer Markell in that office, and I held that title for approximately 4 years, overseeing the banking relationships and the investment managers for the state's general cash pool. And shortly after Governor Markell won election to become governor, I was asked to join the Office of Management and Budget, which then I started as a policy advisor. One of my original things that I accomplished in OMB was actually putting a online checkbook. There was a lot of talk about transparency and putting the state's expenditures online. So that's something that I worked with a team of IT professionals to do. And then it became known that the Director of Budget Development, Planning and Administration was going to be leaving. Just so happens to be Mike Jackson, who is going to be succeeding me in the Director of Office Management Budget. But I replaced him as Director of Budget Development and Planning, so I was responsible for putting together the governor's operating capital budgets. And I held that role for about 6 years. And then, or I guess it was around 5 years, and then I became Deputy Director of the Office Management and Budget. And then when my predecessor left the Office Management and Budget as Director, I was selected by the Governor to assume that role. So that's pretty much my resume, and I feel like I have a tremendous background to fit the job and the responsibilities associated with Chief Financial Officer of the county, and I look forward to working with everyone.
Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you. And I want to say that Mr. Powers and Councilman Hollins have arrived also. Yeah, and Mr. Taggart.
Thank you.
And then Bill.
He was arrived.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Councilman Taggart.
He's here, too.
You're just here?
Yeah.
I thought he was already
here.
Yeah,
Councilman Taggart here. Okay.
Okay. Next, and Councilman Bill.
Yeah, I've been here. I have a question. Okay, I just want to mention, you know, I think when not only you presenting, you know, your background here, but, you know, reading the resume, I had the privilege of knowing Brian and his family, and, you know, I'm very appreciative of the fact that we have an opportunity to consider Brian for the Chief Financial Officer. I think that what he brings to the county will certainly benefit us in many, many ways, more than we may not realize now. But having the experience of internal statewide government and finances in a time where the state is constantly looking for other avenues of funding and governments taking on services and everything, I think that we may find that it's a blessing in disguise to have someone aboard that can not only advise but represent with our finance committee and this council and the administration what this county not only provides and what the citizens of this county pay for that other counties don't. But I just think that your institutional knowledge and experience in the state is a benefit to, you know, could be a benefit to us in the future.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any comments? Yes, Mr. Street.
County executive has told me, he's told all the people, he doesn't think the Route 9 library should be funded through public dollars. Do you agree with that position?
No, I do not.
Thank you.
That would have been a loss.
Any other questions? Yep.
I'm waiting to hear if he's still on the phone.
You're going to get a call soon.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Maxwell. Next we have up is R17006, consenting to the appointment of Marcus Henry for the position of General Manager of the Department of Community Services. Marcus?
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take questions, Marcus, would you like to tell them a little bit about yourself first?
I'm not as impressive as him, though. Born and raised in Wilmington, Delaware. Proud graduate of University of Delaware. Got my master's in public administration about 18 years ago. My first position was with the Delaware State Housing Authority as EA advisor to the state housing director. From there, I went to the Department of Natural Resource Environmental Control as Brownfields Coordinator for a short time. Then I went to the private sector and did affordable housing development in Delaware, New Jersey, and PA at a small firm. From there, I joined up with the Wilmington Housing Authority as Director of Capital Development for about 4 years. And then I was fortunate to get to Newcastle County under County Executive Paul Clark in this position under Community Services. And then after that election with County Executive Tom Gordon, I became Economic Development Director for the last 4 years.
Thank you. Any questions by council? Yes, Mr. Weiner.
Thank you.
And then Diller.
Marcus, would you comment on, if you believe it true, how affordable housing is synergistically intertwined with economic development, transportation, and land use?
It's naturally intertwined here, both what's happening in this state and this region. There's still a critical need, unfortunately, for affordable housing opportunities in both New Castle County and the state of Delaware as a whole. And it behooves my department and our mission to help incentivize that activity, both on the rental side and homeownership opportunities.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Cartier.
Thank you. I know that you're probably aware that we were working on an effort under the previous manager of your department on vacant property. Mm-hmm. And I hope that we continue that and that you bring some fresh perspectives and policy options to dealing with the scads of foreclosed vacant and otherwise vacant residential property throughout the county.
I am currently doing a very, very deep dive just on that issue. I'm also talking to other jurisdictions. Yes, we're going to continue forward on that initiative. Probably going to tweak it a little bit in terms of how we target those properties, but it's an issue. It's a big issue specifically around Route 9 Library and other jurisdictions that we have to address. Thank you.
Councilwoman Diller.
Just saying, nice to see you back.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Mr. Street.
County executive has told me, he told others, that he doesn't think the Route 9 Library should be funded through public dollars. Do you agree with that position?
No, I do not.
What, if anything, do you think you can do to convince him to change his perspective about that?
Well, Councilman, with all due respect, I'm not sure that's his position, but I'll be sure to clarify with the county executive his position and where we stand with the Route 9 Library. The work to date that I've seen and I'm familiar with in the past is very impressive, what's been done to date. This, as you're well aware, Councilman Hollins and others, this work started years ago. I think it may have been the tail end of former County Executive Chris Coons and DeClark and others in looking at the impact and need for that service delivery in the Route 9 area. I have not heard anything with Executive Meyer to that extent, but I'm happy to discuss that with him further to clarify our position.
Okay, let me be real clear.
Sure.
Okay. Chris Coons had nothing to do with it. Okay. I fought for 7.5 years to Paul Clark put it in his capital budget as a small, a scaled-down version. County Executive Gordon enhanced it to make it a library innovation center. So let me be real crystal clear, and all the king's horses is back here. On the one hand, to the victors, go to school. But if anybody's got any ideas of spoiling what I've been involved in and fought for 12 years, and my constituents are expecting it to open, it's not going to happen without a major fight. I'm not looking for no fight, but if you want to start it, I'm going to get in it and get in it to win. And I will do everything I can think of within the legal parameters of the law to see to it that library is not changed, modified, revised, and treated any differently than any of the other libraries. My other question is, there's been a discussion about the possibility of putting senior living or senior high-rise senior accommodations in back of the library on that site. What's your position, or do you have one yet, as it relates to that?
I do not have a position yet on that, sir. I'll be quite honest with you. That's just a function of being able to deal with some of these things.
Well, so I'll let you know. In terms of your response to Councilman Wine's question, and affordable housing and the need for affordable housing in the Route 9 corridor, there's a WMAPCO study,
yes,
that was done to show very clearly the need for senior housing in that area. There has been preliminary discussion about it, and I'm going to be very honest with you.
I'd like to see that happen.
But I'm not going to go to war if it doesn't happen. But I'm going to remain steadfast in my position about the library.
Yes, Mr. Smiley.
Yeah, I didn't sit down here prepared to discuss the library, but just since I heard it twice, just to be clear on the record, for me, Councilman Street is not alone in his position to make sure that this library comes to fruition. Sure.
Hey, yes, Mr. Bell.
Yes, ma'am. And I, too, I join along with Councilman Street, Councilman Smiley, and I think what you'll find, and, you know, Marcus, you've been around government for a long while, but this Route 9 Library and Innovation Center didn't come to fruition overnight. A lot of planning, a lot of thought put into it, and administrations do change. But I think there has to be a spirit of cooperation and understanding that, just because administrations change does not mean that we can't work closely together, have a good understanding as to some of the things that we've accomplished and where we feel we're going with certain things, and have a good spirit of cooperation. And it's not easy for moving back into a position with a new executive and maybe not knowing all of his direction. But I think that the majority of us on this council know you well enough that you'll do your very best to represent not just the administration, but what we believe in, what we've all worked very hard for. But I do, in concert with Councilman Smiley, Councilman Street, we moved a project back in the 6th and 12th district for a couple of years, and we still don't have a library. And we've got some ideas in the futures to some parcels of land and possibly, where it could be put. But this was important enough, I think, to all of us that proceed. And I think the majority of us want to see that, completed. So,
thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll move. Thank you, Mr. Henry.
Thank you, Council President.
Next, R-17-007, consenting to the appointment of Rich Hall for the position of General Manager of the Department of Land Use. Rich?
Hi.
And would you like to begin by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Madam President and members of the Council. My name is Rich Hall, born and raised in Salisbury, Maryland, and went to undergraduate in planning at East Carolina University, and then went to graduate school at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill for a graduate degree in planning, and then came back to Maryland and worked in local government, Harford County, for about 3 years. I was at the state of Maryland for 23 years, 8 as Secretary of Maryland Department of Planning. It's a cabinet level department there, agency of about 150, 160 people. And then I've, for about the last year and a half or so, I've worked for a nonprofit called Citizens Planning and Housing Association. So I've worked on a wide range of planning. I've done a plan for a small town of about 200 people, and I've done one for 6 million people when I worked on a plan for the Maryland Department of Planning. I've done planning at the neighborhood scale, dealing directly with the community block by block, if you will. I've done some pretty technical GIS and computer modeling of growth, and I've done community development, traditional land use and water resource and land preservation. So I think it's fair to say it's full suite of planning. And I'm very attracted to Newcastle County because you have a lot of that full suite here. There are certainly community development revitalization issues in older urban parts of the county. You have older suburban parts of the county where you have a lot of pressures for infill and redevelopment. You have greenfield development. There's rural issues and everything in between. So that makes it a very attractive place for a lifelong planning nerd like myself to come and be your general manager of land. So I'm excited to be here and look forward to working with all you, certainly those of us in the administration and the citizens of Newcastle County.
Yes, Councilwoman Diller.
Yes, Mr. Hall, it's really great to meet you and to understand the breadth of your experience. Just one thing, you do not have to email me at 1:19 in the morning and then again at 7 o'clock. I had met Mr. Hall at the swearing-in ceremony, had ended up in a discussion with him about annexation. He's already sent me information at 1:19 this morning, and I said thank you at about 6:55, and right after 7 o'clock he emailed me. So you should get more sleep than that. Just let you know.
Thank you. Thank you.
Councilman Weiner.
Thank you very much, Madam President, and I just wanted thank you for being willing to serve Rich from one land use nerd to another. It's a pleasure to have you. As you know, I served on the National Association of Counties Smart Growth Chair and Land Use Chair, and done research for ULI and worked with the National Conference of Cities as well. I want to ask you the same questions that I posed before, and how would you describe the synergistic relationship, if you believe in that, affordable housing, transportation, land use, and economic development?
It all goes together. To have a viable community, you need places where people can live, work, play, and thrive. And people have to be able to get around through various modes. Now, certainly depends on where you are. It's very location specific. And you know, affordable housing can come in many different ways. I think we've learned a lot. We collectively, in this country, in this region, with affordable housing, the dangers of concentrating it. You can certainly see that just down the road a little ways in Baltimore City. There are parts of Baltimore City that have changed a little since the 68 riots, and that just happened again about a year and a half ago with the small riots. Some people call it the civil unrest, whatever you want to call it. And so you see the dangers of forgetting communities. But affordable housing is important to rural areas too. Transportation, certainly transportation is one of the things I've heard about an awful lot. It's always a very big, important part of planning, smart growth, land use planning, community development, economic development. But I've heard that a lot here in the county, and certainly if you just look at a map and see who you are, a lot of roads go through, a lot of connecting roads. I think that's going to continue to be a very important effort and challenge to deal with, whether you're talking about highways, transit, or within neighborhood, and certainly the looking at the modes that often get forgotten, walking, and even bike. So that's important also from economic development, community development perspective, and those two things go hand in hand in my mind, because employers want the type of employees that want to live in those kind of places. Everyone deserves it, but certainly, employers want to be in the viable communities, and I think those kind of things you mentioned, Councilman, are what make a viable community. Good transportation, good community economic development, and the good built environment, this well-connected
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, Mr. Powers.
I've got a couple questions. You were at Harford County. What did they do with preservation there?
They participated in state programs when I was there. They also tried to increase their TDR a little bit. They had a TDR that wasn't used very much, transfer development rights. But probably the biggest thing they did while I was there was to focus their preservation efforts, look at parts of the county, and trying to get this contiguous blocks of farmlands, rural lands. And also, they used an installment purchase program that they had learned from Howard County, the other H county in Maryland, to make the dollars go further. And so instead of just paying outright, here you go, property owner, here's the money for your easement, your preservation easement, they're able to step that money out over time through an installment purchase program, make that an option of the various different preservation programs that the county could work with the state and go out and do outreach to the property owners to give them a couple different options.
How did they come about those areas, Brad?
They mapped areas that are already preserved. They looked at the prime soils. They looked at trying to look at contiguous properties, and they also worked with the property owners themselves to see who was more versus less interested in participating.
Was it a volunteer program, or?
Yes.
It wasn't a down zone?
No.
Okay. I guess you and I have talked And I said my biggest concern is what happened while you were there with the tiered system.
Right.
And knowing farmers in that county that happened to lose a lot of their value by being going down to 1 in 25 to 1 in 30, I have real concern because most of the rural area that's in the county has already been down zone 1 to 5 when they were all 20 years ago the same as everywhere else. And going and experiencing from my family to go on 1 in 30, and the second thing, I know it wasn't with you, but it hurts low-income farmers and when the sprinkler system in the counties, especially on the Eastern Shore, where an area that you want to farm, but you're adding $20,000 to $30,000 to a young farmer to build a house, that just doesn't get it done. I mean, they're seeing it in Kent County, the school district's about to go broke in Maryland over large lot zoning and sprinkler systems. There's no development going on. But you, to make a farm successful, we have to have tools to be able to do it. And you know, you can use it as a tool and down zone and figure you're not going to do it, but you're going to hurt the farmer that's there. And you know, to me, I think I've said it to you, is I'm for a volunteer program that you pay for it, but to take it, we've already done it once at down zoning. I know you said there's not much, when you down zone, the value does go down. Because when in the S zone, it's probably 50 to 60, 70,000, it's 10 to 15 in the SR. If you look, and you know it as a planner, there's only so much going to be spent on that housing lot. Where in the SR, the lots that were zoned 1 and still are 1 bring about 125, 150. Where they're 5-acre lots, the exact same money, because a bank won't loan you any more money. So to say by downzoning, you're not going to devalue somebody's property that needs it as equity to get loans to farm, especially with what economy we're coming into right now. The dollar going high and we're not exporting enough. That concerns me. And I don't know, I just want it on record that I am concerned about, you know, go into a tiered system like that, if we ever did, and I'm just wasting it.
Any other comments? Yes, Mr. Tackett.
Thank you, Madam President. Rich, I'm looking forward to vote a little bit later tonight. You know, hopefully we'll be welcoming you on board soon. You know, obviously we have, you know, in a sense, a unique Bible here that obviously, you know, you've not dealt with before, and that's the UDC. However, you know, strong planning principles are not unique to the UDC, and that's something that obviously you're going to be able to bring in. A few initiatives, you know, I'm hoping to get our arms around pretty quickly is, you know, like things like, you know, the vacant properties, redevelopment, and some land banking. And the things we've talked about way too long, and we need to get them in motion.
And just so you know, Councilman, I work for the town of Carrboro. It's right next to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. They're one of the first municipalities in the country to have a UDC. So it's definitely, it's a smaller town, not as elaborate as one here, but the idea of combining those codes and under one cover, if you will, under one chapter is something I've dealt with, so important. And look forward to the policy issues you mentioned as well. We've already been talking about those a bit.
Mr. Cartier.
Thank you. Welcome on board.
Thank you.
I think that you know, our Department of Land Use is one of the most important functions in our county government. It helps determine the future and has a huge impact on quality of life of the policies in that department, on quality of life of communities. And I just want to kind of focus on one particular area. Well, you've heard several areas of concern voiced by members of council. Your department has a code enforcement division and also looks at regulating rental property. I can tell you that I'm very concerned about our code enforcement division, whether it's properly staffed. Also, I think we've kind of given up on rental regulating rental property, to be honest with you. And we did an ordinance back in 2004 where we wanted to inspect on a random basis 5% of the rental units. I don't think we're meeting those goals. And I know that we have the rental communities divided between large complexes, and then we have our communities where we have small rental properties and scattered through communities. I think that's an area of great concern, the quality of those rental communities, the treatment of tenants, the just the general quality of that type of housing stock. And I don't think we're doing a very good job of dealing with it at all. And the reality is, we're probably going to, if we're really going to tackle it, we're probably going to have to look at some kind of fee to register a rental unit. You can currently register it by, you know, free, and it just goes on a database. But I think, you know, in order to get revenue together to have the inspections we need, we're going to have to look at, in that direction. Because right now, I mean, in my mind, we're really not doing a good job with that at all.
Well, I appreciate that. Councilman and staff so far have indicated to me that of that ordinance on inspecting rentals, and they are behind on the targets. And I also understand there's a couple vacancies in code. So I look forward to working with you and others on that important issue.
Great. Mr. Bell.
Thank you. Your experience down in Maryland with transportation and development, was your position one where your department made the decisions as far as the transportation system, as far as the highways and the improvements that were needed, or were they made by the Department of Transportation?
It was the latter, sir. We worked with the Department of Transportation, but we didn't make those decisions, for better or worse.
So was that one of, did they just have to give concurrency, or did you and your position and your department have any final say in it as far as, you know, the roadways and the improvements that were needed, traffic signals, things of that nature?
There were, I would say it was more of an informal concurrency, but the relationships are such, and the governor's expectation was the secretaries would work together. There were certain provisions in the state's Priority Funding Area Act, which is, Delaware has an analogous program that targeted growth areas. And so if there were exceptions to that, state dollars going to a transportation facility that serves the area outside, there's an exception process. So we did have to sign off on that, and a couple other provisions we had to sign off on. But we were mainly, to be, you know, put it as straightforward as I can, advising, at times pushing, nudging a sister agency, transportation in that case. We weren't the deciders for the most part.
Well, welcome to Newcastle County.
Thank
because
you.
We're in the same boat, if not worse.
And we're working with Delta.
Well, and I think that one of the problems that you'll find is before a traffic light goes in, we wait until a teenager or someone gets killed or seriously injured. Highways are put in that are not only inadequate, but not built to standard specifications of DelDOT. And so we face a lot of problems as we go along with development. And it's not a pet peeve, it's a fact that I don't see the spirit of cooperation with DelDOT that we should have with development, because I really do think it's one of building infrastructure. You go to some of these other states and you see the highways and the improvements being made as you go along, and as the development comes, the infrastructure's there, it's being improved. Here it seems like it's years upon years. We're always behind the curve. And so, you know, I walkable, bikeable, and everything, I buy into all that. I think it's great. But we have a transportation authority for the highway systems and everything. The spirit of cooperation there, and when they concur with something, always isn't the best for some of our development projects.
Thank you. Mr. Weiner.
Yes, just an additional thought was prompted by Councilman Carney and Councilman Bell. My first employment at Temple Law School was representing tenants in North City Congress, North Philadelphia, against landlords, and I always seemed to lose my cases in Philadelphia until I found out that the judges had a special relationship with the landlords. Then I worked at Community Legal Aid here. And so every time a project comes in, you're going to hear me ask about walkability, bikeability, and transit orientation. For some, it's an option.
to not choose not to use a car, but to live, shop, work, and play by walking or biking. For others that are economically challenged, it's absolutely mandatory that we find a way to, as new urbanists, to make walkability and bikeability the rule rather than the exception. Thank you.
Mr. Street.
Let me agree to disagree with Councilor Warren.
What a surprise. Council, any more questions? Okay, Mr. Hall, thank you.
Thank you.
Next, R17008, consenting to the appointment of Vanessa Phillips for the position of Chief Human Resources Officer. Welcome, Vanessa, and if you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
I was born in Washington, D.C. and raised there. I moved to the state of Delaware 20 years ago to attend the University of Delaware. I graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in Leadership and Consumer Economics. I then attended the University of Maryland School of Law, graduated in 2004, and began my legal career with the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C. in their Office of General Counsel. I was a labor relations specialist there where I helped negotiate contracts with the FOP and represented the department at disciplinary and grievance hearings. I then became a prosecutor with the Office of the Attorney General in the District of Columbia. I served as the sole government fraud prosecutor where I prosecuted waste, fraud, and abuse offenses by government employees. I then was hired, in 2012 by the Delaware Department of Transportation as a regulatory specialist, where I handled all disciplinary and grievance hearings for the department. I represented DelDOT at negotiations with our unions there. I also represented the department at pre-arbitration hearings. I was promoted to the Human Resources Director position, where I directed operations for employment services, classification, compensation, benefits administration, labor relations, and equal employment opportunity matters. I spearheaded the strategic mentoring program while serving as a director. I also initiated a organizational values program for the entire department, including human resources, where we develop organizational values for our section. In 2015, I met with former Secretary John McMahon, who was the Secretary of Labor at the time, and he asked for my help to resolve some issues over the Department of Labor. So I left the Department of Transportation to help Secretary McMahon develop some policies and procedures for the department and resolve some grievances with the union. I stayed there until I was nominated by Matt Meyer to serve as the Chief Human Resources Officer for the county.
Thank you. Any questions from council? Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. Ms. Phillips, your background is varied and impressive, and it will serve you well in HR having all of these varied backgrounds. It's very impressive, and we're blessed to have you willing to serve. My daughter lives in Shaw, and my wife was a prosecutor for 20 years, so I'm surrounded by women who have achieved high levels, and you're a role model for them, and the work that you've done with our state is really exemplary. And I have no other question except to say thank you for coming to join us.
Thank you.
Right. Council, anyone else? Any more questions? Hearing none. Ms. Phillips, thank you. And real quickly, I would like to thank a few people. These four appointees coming together so quickly was through the help of Julie Sebring with the Ethics Commission, Carol Doolin, thank you, Council to Council, Betsy Gardner, Clerk, and Kate Maxwell, my aide. Matt Meyer had asked us if we could do this. This is the week before his swearing in. And, you know, he was not going to be sworn in yet, and it had to be noticed by the 3rd. And so we did. We all pulled together, the Ethics Commission, you know, all of us together, and were able to get these resolutions done and in. And I want to thank all of the appointees here. I've spoken to all of them, and they are very impressive. And I thank you for coming here today. Next, we're going to move on to R17010, to amend the rules of procedure of Newcastle County Council 3 and 4 to comport with law and practice and for general housekeeping. Mr. Smiley.
Yes, I worked with Council Dooling on this. This actually came about because of some of the exchanges we had during a recent council meeting. So I'd like to go over it with you and brief this exchange between each change. These are our rules. 3.1.3 clarifies that the council president will sponsor amendments as well as clarifying that council members may also sponsor planned amendments that they have requested. So this clarifies that the president sponsors planned amendments. However, council members that may choose to have one brought forward on their own for council's consideration retain the right to sponsor as they do other legislation. But overwhelmingly, those that come over from the executive branch go to the president.
Okay, any comment from council?
I'm not done. You want to do the whole thing or do you want to go step by step?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I generally pause before I move on to the next thing.
No more taking breaths.
3.4.3. I actually listen to a radio station that reminds people to take a breath every morning. 3.4.3 clarifies council member requirements of notification to clerk if they plan to lift legislation from the table when it has been absent from the previous agenda. So this is just a reminder. It's in the rules already, but it's being changed some. If you have legislation that you've tabled, it has to be advertised. So basically what this is, it's a reminder that you need to notify the clerk if you're going to have it. I myself have had legislation that I've tabled and told her you don't need to advertise it for the next three meetings. All right, so the advance notice. And instead of 2 weeks, it goes to 13 days prior to council meeting, and then the sponsor is going to lift it from the table. Again, this is all in our rules, and all it is changing some that are already there. 3.4.5 is stricken, and changes are made to 3.5.1, 3.5.2, and 3.5.3. And this is just to clarify the three ways legislation can be stricken from an agenda, i.e. withdrawn. And that is, and I'll go over them real quick. If not yet introduced, the sponsor shall state during announcements that he or she does not intend to introduce the legislation. Once the announcement's made, the legislation is stricken from the agenda. Nothing else needs to be done. 3.5.2, once introduced, the sponsor shall state during announcements that he or she is withdrawing the legislation. Once that announcement is made, the legislation is stricken from the agenda, and it's as if it never existed. And the substance of any such stricken legislation would require reintroduction under another number, which we've also done before. And 3.5.3, it's automatically withdrawn when a sponsor or council member leaves office unless another council member agrees to sponsor the legislation or unless there are co-sponsors already on it. So that's that portion. 3.6.1, very minor, just adds the word recusing to the voting options available to council members. We've done that, we've recused, but it wasn't actually in the rules. So that is now in the rules. Let's see what else we have. And 4.4.7, which is the last one, it clarifies the restriction to council members' option to reconsider legislation just voted. A lot of council members may not realize this, but this just makes it clear. If we actually, I know some people don't want me to say this, but if we vote on a piece of legislation and a council member is not happy with the results of that vote, so long as they make a motion for reconsideration prior to the clerk announcing the results, it can be reconsidered. Not like Dover, where you can stand up and change your vote. That's the one thing, and it has been in our rules, and this just clarifies it by adding, and no motion for reconsideration may be entertained unless there is legal error. So if you don't do it within that time frame, unless there's legal error, there's no reconsideration. And that, Madam President, is the end.
Thank you. Next, Mr. Weiner.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment, and I'll defer to legal counsel, but I just thought it would be good for the record to reiterate. a special exception which exists in Newcastle County Ethics Code, which states that any council person may state that he or she has a conflict of interest, state that generically, and then state, however, I am going to vote because to not vote would disenfranchise the constituents that I represent. It is little used, but it is an important opportunity for council members.
Thank you. Any more comment from council? Mr. Tackett.
On the table. So right now it's 2 weeks and you're moving it to 13 days?
Which is one day off.
Yeah. And is that because of advertising?
And it's not, yeah, and that's not, it's not tabling. It's notifying the clerk that you're going to have it lifted from the table.
Yeah. I'm just thinking some of the,
that's,
well, it's one day.
That's no, I mean, you can, yeah. You're going from a 14-day requirement to a 13. You can do as I have done with the clerk in the past. I've said, I don't want it on for January 10th. I don't want it on for January 24th, but I want it on for February 14th. You fulfill the requirement. 13 is the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've even on the floor of council stated that, made the motion to table the legislation and also informed council and everyone else that here's when I would be bringing it back. I've also filled.
Next council to council, Carol Dolan.
Carol Dolan, council. I just wanted to make it clear, to clarify that council member Smiley was attempting to, as a number of you have, to make these a little bit clearer. And if you notice, there's a word in here that says long-tabled legislation. And the reason for that is the clerk automatically put something on that was tabled on the next agenda. This is something that council voted on a long time ago, that if you've had something on the table for a year, that the clerk has to be able to put that in the newspaper so it doesn't come as a surprise to the public. And I just wanted to clarify that word.
Mr. Weiner.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. Mr. Tackett was first, and then Mr. Weiner.
I mean, the only thing I was thinking of is land use legislation. Like when we have to table a plan, it has to go back for a technical reason. Sometimes you work right down to the wire in the very last minute of getting it back. I mean, this is just a day less, but I think it's going to be imperative, you know, that I guess Betsy's now going to have to adhere to this a little bit more conformatively, you know, that they get back that the technical answer has gotten back to us in time that it is going to make the agenda, right?
Is that actually tabled?
Before we
can table.
It's not tabled.
It's not tabled.
Out. That's different.
Council, would you like to respond?
Yeah,
no,
you don't table.
No, you're not tabled.
What?
Just
not. I think you do.
Okay. No? Okay. Yeah, I believe you're motioning Mr. Weiner for council to council to clarify.
Yeah, I had another point I wanted to make, but I thought we could just get some clarity on this from council to council.
Carol Dolan, council to council. There is a difference with land use recommendations. I think council member Smiley responded to that. It is referred back for recommendation and hearing, and then it comes back to the clerk. That's a little bit different than tabling, but also the clerk is advised when it's ready to come back. So that's a little bit different than a regular council member deciding that I want to keep something off the table for 3.5 years.
Mr. Weiner, did you want to respond again?
No, I just wanted to take advantage of the previous opportunity to make a point now.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Powers?
Okay. May I have the floor to?
Yes.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that council to council Dolan made a point that we previously had changed the rule that if something is being tabled for an extended period of time, that it would need to be re-advertised. I just want to say that rule under a previous council I had initiated it actually has served us well, because prior to that there was a sort of a strategy where a council member could just wait until opponents stopped showing up and then quietly bring it off the table when no one was there to speak against it. But because of our all of our agreement for transparency, we changed our rule at that time, and it served us and the public well.
Okay. And Mr. Powers, you had raised your hand?
Yes. I think I understand what George is doing. Table it on a Tuesday, and you get it figured out the next day. If you had 2 weeks, it would be 4 weeks from now. But if you put it on Wednesday, it's going to come up on the next time we'd have council in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but here's...
But I'm just making sure, because that's how I'm reading it.
You're right. But the one thing to clarify is, when you table the legislation, you can say, make a motion to table to be revisited at the next council meeting. And you're covered. Yeah, it's all about the average.
I understand that, but writing it down here, that's more or less the only time it'll work, because if you're, you know, 13 days, you're thrown into the next 4 weeks.
But if it was 2 days later, you would still be there.
Not on 13 days, but unless you did it the way you did.
Council to council?
Carol Dolan, Council to Council, and I would certainly let the clerk to council address this herself, but my understanding is the process is that it goes back on the agenda if it's been tabled. We're not talking about that. We're talking about long-tabled resolutions, to what your point, Councilmember Weiner, a council member who's tabled something for 2 years, as you said.
And this is what I tried to say, that I have tabled legislation and instructed the clerk not to place it on the agenda. Unless you advise the clerk not to place it on the agenda, it will be on every agenda going forward, unless you request it not to be.
Okay, any other, Mr. Weiner?
Yes, and there's a practice on the part of our clerk of council, which I think has been a good one. I don't know if it's in the rules or not, but after it's appeared for a few times, Betsy will call up a sponsor and say, do you want to continue to advertise it? Obviously, it's taking up space in the Saturday legal notices, but also it sort of keeps those that might be in support or in opposition sort of in suspense in high gear. And so the forces for or against can sort of stand down until the sponsor and council person decides that it's time to bring it back again.
Any other comments from council? Seeing none, we'll move on. Next is 16141, to amend the pay plan and rates of pay for unclassified employees of county council. Is there any discussion or comment from council? Yes. Mr.
Yeah.
Weiner.
Yes, could we get an explanation on what this is?
It is what it says it is, to amend the pay plan and rates of pay for unclassified employees of county council.
I can.
Could I get someone
Mr. Smiley.
You don't mind? I was there. The pay increases that came through, cost of living and all?
Yes.
The auditor doesn't get them unless the audit committee approves it. The audit committee, I was at that meeting, the audit committee discussed this and made a motion to send the approval to council. So this is the approval for the pay increase for the county auditor.
Thank you.
On council. Thank you. But that's what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comment from council? Seeing none, moving on. Discussion of amending and revising the job description of policy advisor / financial advisor and council to council. I know Councilman Sheldon and a few others have already begun the process of reviewing and revising the job descriptions of the policy director / finance advisor and council to council. I would like to request that the personnel committee continue their process of the revisions, and once completed, they bring the recommendation before council to review and adopt. Is there any discussion or comment from council? Ms. Kilpatrick.
Through personnel committee, we have looked at policy advisor, finance advisor, and deputy clerk. I don't think we've done anything with council to council. Do you want that?
Yes,
included?
We brought it up last time, because when you're looking at the job descriptions, and they were all handed out last week,
mm-hmm.
It needs to be updated. One, you know, there's a few things in there that the council to council does not do anymore. They don't have anybody under them, so they're not supervising anybody, so that would need to be taken out, as well as tweaking a few other things.
Okay.
But most importantly, what I've found is that the finance director / policy director has some duties that really would, there's some confusion of who's task it is to do certain things under that, which I'd like to see it, and maybe you can take a look at that, is put it under council to council. It has to do with finance, but it's also legal, and we can go through some of the...
So basically defining the, whether, as we talked about last time, you want to define who writes the legislation.
Yeah, you really have to define it because there's confusion as to which one does it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we want to do that before we're hiring a new council to council, so they know what the role is coming in.
Okay.
Yes, Ms. Diller.
Yeah, I would not want to take the supervision information requirements out for council to council, because in the past that person has supervised people.
We've had a paralegal.
Pardon?
Through a paralegal if we would hire them.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not sure we want to take supervision out of that mm-hmm. responsibility. I want to keep that in that job description.
Yes, Mr. Weiner.
Yes. during my 20 years, we've had times when demands on council to council have been greater, and we've had as many as two employees working for council to council. So I would, again, ask the personnel committee to consider our past experience. We may or may not get a heavy demand in the future. Also, wanted to thank you, Madam President, for your direction to personnel subcommittee chairs. I thought that was right on point.
Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none. Discussion of voting process for council to council position.
Mm-hmm.
This was discussed in the last executive committee meeting, and it was determined based on the Attorney General's decision handed out at last week's meeting how the voting is to be handled. Votes need to be candidate A, candidate B, candidate C. Candidates' names will not be mentioned on the record. Next, roll call of council members need to be taken. I believe that's it. And is there any discussion or comment from council regarding that? Mr. Weiner.
Yes. Could I just ask clarification from our council to council? I know in your example you use candidate A, but does that mean we can't or shouldn't use the real names? Just want to get clarification from council to council on that.
Council to council?
Carol Dolan, Council to Council. The Freedom of Information Act sets minimum standards for the governmental body. If this body determined that they wanted to discuss the candidates by name, it certainly could do that. The downside of that is pointed out in the opinion that was handed out is that those individuals may have other jobs, may not wish to have in the paper that they're looking for another job.
Okay.
May find that extremely uncomfortable, and certainly if you decide to do that, I would suggest that you talk to those individuals ahead of time because they may not wish to go forward under those circumstances.
I just want to thank council to council because I know I was operating under a misunderstanding of the Attorney General's ruling, and she very quickly got the previous ruling and clarified it for me and for some others as well. Thank you.
Yes. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Mr. Hollins.
Yes, you mentioned on the other item as relates to the job descriptions, and you have a desire to postpone the hiring of council to council until such time as council agrees to the job description. I think that you may be surprised how much discussion is going to happen relating to the job descriptions of the policy advisor, finance advisor, and council to council. So I don't think that's something going to happen within the next two or three. I mean,
mm-hmm.
personnel can work on this and work on this and work on this. Once it gets to this body, I don't see that happening very quickly.
Right.
Because quite frankly, some of the things I've heard so far are obviously things I just will not be agreeable to. So that's going to be a much longer discussion than you may be anticipating. But I think to say that we're not going to have hired a council of council until such time that it's done,
right.
I think that's happen. Just a very unfortunate impediment in hiring the next person.
To respond to Mr. Hollins, I'll leave that up to the personnel committee, however they want to handle it. I just want to make sure we're addressing it, you know, why we're doing this process, so that it's clear for the next council to council, whoever that is. They know what their job description is.
Of course, my point is that you know they can take as long as it takes or as quick as it takes. But if
yes.
you're saying that you prefer not to hire until such time, I think that's not a position to take for this council. I think
I'm
we
in agreement
need to
with
separate
you.
Those
mm-hmm.
two things: hire the council to council, and still work on the job descriptions, as we will be doing for the policy advisor and the financial advisor, whomever else that we're going to look at the job description. I do not think that should hold up the hiring process.
I'm in agreement, thank you. Mr. Smiley.
Yeah, as distasteful as this is to someone who's spent so much time in organized labor, having looked at the resumes of those coming, that are interested. I don't think there's any of them that are not familiar with the employment at will provision of the state of Delaware, which all council employees and staff fall under, which means at any time we can modify, change, and or terminate items from the job description. So they know they're flipping a coin when they apply, because that's just the way it is. It's not a binding contract, collective bargaining agreement, this is what you do. And even those are subject to renegotiation and changes. So I appreciate it. I agree we do the work, but I don't think we hold up moving forward. So I think we're pretty much in agreement.
Well, it may be an employment at will state, and we may have that ability, but this council has proven that it ain't gonna fire nobody about haven't touched anything since 2004, so give me a break.
I'm not talking about firing.
Firing, changing, modifying, none of that's been done.
Any other comments from council? Okay, moving on. Update on the distribution of the letter urging creation of a multi-jurisdictional task force to address crime. And it was with input of Councilman Street, and I thank Councilman Street for his help. The letter was hand-delivered to the governor, county executive, and mayor of Wilmington on 12/20/16, and a press release was also sent out on 12/28. Is there any discussion or comment from council? Seeing this, Councilman Street.
I made my comment during the Public Safety Committee meeting. I just don't see how we put a dent in this crime, especially the violent crime, if you don't have all agencies working together. And there have been situations through various administrations where city FOP took the position that they didn't want help, other FOPs took the position that they didn't want to help, and then there was a situation where, I was instrumental in asking the governor to put the state police on the street, and that was only with volunteerism and overtime, then the city FOP had a fit. My point being, there's connections, city, county, and state. There have been variations of exchange of information, no exchange of information between the administration and the beneficiaries that are the criminal elements. And it's to the point where I'm tired of going to funerals. As a matter of fact, I'm to the point where I do everything I can not to go to funerals of young people that I would think would be at my service. I'm tired. A mother's wail standing over her child, it never goes away from you. And until we have all hands on board and there's some unification, I don't think it's going to stop. And that was my position early on in my first term of office. Certainly took a position when Jack Markell took office, and we sent a comparable letter, and that's my position there. So I appreciate you sending a letter, and I appreciate the acquiescence of this council, and hopefully the three of them will listen, and hopefully there'll be support from City Council and the General Assembly, because we're all in this together. You know, they're shooting in Dover. You know, I had two young people that ended up in the hospital here that I'm familiar with, the family quite close to, shot in Dover, and they're shooting all the time there. So it's a statewide epidemic, and we just need to be working on together, including, and I'm gonna go back to the congressional delegation, which I should have had to include, but you know, there's a responsibility that they have too. The Violence Network Prevention Program, it was an asset to the city. By the same token, as I argued vigorously with the mayor and some of them in the public press, to the extent that federal police agencies, FBI, U.S. Marshals, ATF, to the extent that they specialize in gangs, drugs, and guns, technical assistance, in my opinion, is woefully insufficient. Use your specialization in gangs, drugs, and guns to help us reduce this violence. So.
Thank you, Mr. Street. Are there any other comments? Are there any other agenda items? Council? I just want to take just a second one more time to thank everybody that helped for these four appointments that are happening today. They gave up their New Year's weekend and worked through the weekend to make this happen. And, you know, I cannot thank them enough for doing that. And again, is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
The meeting is adjourned.
Well, holy mackerel.